It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and it's time to get ready for planting season. To help us get ready, Linda Knave is here today, Extension Program Specialist in the Value-Added Agriculture Program. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Charity.
Thank you for being here today.
How are you?
Excellent. And
good.
Richard Geron is also with us today, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning.
And of course, you can join the conversation with your questions this hour as well. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, there are a lot of people who cleaned up their gardens last fall. There are a lot of us who did not. So plant debris is our number one priority right now.
Yes, it is. The problem last fall is we had good intentions to clean up the beds, but winter came really fast. If you recall, we had early snow, then it was cold for a long time, and then after that, you just kind of forgot about what was out there and what you left undone. So now is the time that we can start thinking about that. Get ready for spring. Some of the bulbs are up already. I actually did see some daffodils blooming down
really?
In Polk County yesterday.
Wow.
It's nice. It's there. Spring is here. Although the weather today doesn't quite depict that.
No, well, this is spring. I mean, if you don't have a day like this in April, it's not. It's not Iowa.
That's true. That's true.
But so when you start to clear out that plant debris, do you need to try to think back to last season and think about some of the diseases that you may have had, things like that?
One thing I like to do in the perennial garden and annual garden, because oftentimes they're combined, is remember which plants were your annuals and which ones were your perennials. Because as you start pulling things out, let's say we're pulling out old zinnias, annuals such as salvias and other things that have dried up and died, or dusty miller can have some color yet, but they're probably gone. So you start looking at what your annuals were and pull those out. But be careful, because some of your perennials, sort of the tops die down all the way down, and they sort of look like they could be a dead annual, but they're not. Those are the things you've got to be careful with, because if you start pulling on those, you might pull out the plant itself. Example would be your mums. We like to leave the mums, the foliage up in the fall and through the winter to help hold snow and insulate the plant so we don't get the freezing and thawing, lifting the crown out of the soil. But if you go and just pull that dead foliage out, you might pull some of the plant out as well, because you're going to start to see some new growth in your mums right now.
Okay, so make sure you know what you're pulling up.
Right, but there are some foliage that really does pull out better than it does cut. Example being daylilies. Daylilies and hostas are some that you can just, if you take a tug and tug it from the side, it pulls out very easily. Then you don't have those stubs and debris left, those little remnants left in your garden. So just yank
it
gently.
And you're not going to damage the perennial then?
No, you're not. Okay. And the same goes with iris. You can do that gently as well. Those dead leaves just pull off real easy, abscise we'd say, real easy from the mother plant.
All right. Now, when you gather up that plant debris, just straight into the compost bin, or do you have to think about that?
If you have a compost bin, that's adequate. There are some plants that do harbor some diseases, but the composting process will do a pretty good job of destroying that. If you do have some severe diseases, let's say iris leaf spot, things like that, maybe you'd want to put those somewhere else. But actually, the composting process is great. Just don't leave it on the ground. Get it out of the garden, because those are sources of disease infection for future plants. Composting, if you have it, is a great solution, because then you generate a product that can be used back into your garden, help build the soil, add organic matter to the soil, water and nutrient retention back into the soil. But not many people have the facilities or space for a compost pile, especially urban gardeners. In which case, they do need to dispose of it. They do need to bag it, or they need to dispose of it somewhere appropriate. And it's been a long time, and I remember, Richard, you remember too, when this ban probably came into mm-hmm. place, and I think it was 1988, the law passed that banned us from putting our yard waste, meaning prunings and lawn clippings and leaves and things like that, in landfills, because our landfills were filling up at a dangerously fast rate. And so what communities created was depositories for this yard waste materials, which actually turned out, I think, in my opinion, to be a pretty good thing, because they compost it. They make that compost available to residents, and it recycles it. So I think it was a good thing. But it does create a few problems or inconveniences, so to speak, for home gardeners. So you have to buy the bags, and the bags are sort of what they call craft ply paper bags. You can buy them at hardware stores, grocery stores. And the general cost varies from community to community. It could be $8 for 5 bags. Another alternative is to use their stickers that they put on the bag for trash collection. And they cost anywhere from, I did a little looking, and $1.25 to $1.75 a sticker. But those stickers need to go on, again, the paper bags. You can't put them on your yard trash bags that are plastic, because they do not degrade. They have to be on the paper bags for most communities. The cost of the bag then covers the cost of disposal. So it covers the cost of your Metro Waste or whoever does it to haul it away for you.
All right. So it takes a couple of extra steps, but it's worth it.
It is. It is. So you can't say don't generate yard waste, because you're going to need to do that. Any kind of a maintenance in your landscape is going to require some kind of yard waste.
All right. Now, I mentioned before, thinking back to problems you may have had in the garden last year, as you're clearing out the plant debris, of course, that's a good reminder of what you planted where last year. What are some of the important things that we need to think about when we're deciding where we're going to plant things this year? With regard to last year, crop rotation on a small scale.
In a vegetable garden on a small scale, that's a really good point, Charity. In a vegetable garden, because we do get a buildup of diseases and some problems there, it's a good idea to have like a 4-year rotation plan if possible. But as you have a small garden, you're going to be rototilling or mixing that soil up. So rotation might be somewhat difficult. So good sanitation is really critical. You have those old tomato plants hang, and the plants are still hanging in the cages. Get rid of that plant debris as much as possible, because that which falls, the leaves that are on the ground, get stirred in, will decompose somewhat. But if they're still laying on the soil, they will be a source of inoculum for future tomato disease problems, such as early blight and septorial leaf spot.
All right. And do you need to do something special to clean those tomato cages so you're not transmitting diseases that way?
No, just get rid of the excess plant debris that's on there. Any leaves that are hanging on, just pull them off. I mean, you don't have to sanitize the cages or anything like that.
All right. Anything you want to add, Richard, or shall we get started with questions?
Well, it's kind of cold today, and so there are some things that you want to leave kind of covered yet. For example, strawberries.
Good point.
Because if you covered those with a mulch, a straw mulch, the inclination is to remove that. But if you do, and then we have some warm weather and they bloom early, we can have a frost or freeze, which may destroy the flowers. So with those, you want to keep them back as long as you can. So probably leave that on for maybe another week or 10 days if you can.
All right. And it is still April, and things can happen here.
It can still snow. Right, so.
All right, that's a very good point. Well, let's go to the phones. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Barbara is on the line in Boone. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I got rid of all my creeping tarly last year, and now I have bare spots on my lawn. I'm wondering when I can plant grass seed.
Okay. Well, the best time to sow grass seed is actually late summer. Okay,
right.
Typically mid-August to mid-September. But as far as doing it this spring, it's a little bit early yet.
Okay.
Again, you want to wait until the ground is nice and warm, because basically what you need for good grass seed germination is good seed-to-soil contact, mm-hmm. moisture, and a nice uniformly warm soil.
Okay.
So I'd be shooting for maybe April 15th, April 20th, far as seeding in central Iowa. And so when you do that, as far as the small spots, kind of work them up a little bit with like a rake,
mm-hmm.
so you have a loose soil surface.
Sure.
Sow your seed. then kind of lightly rake the seed into the soil, and then keep those spots moist with watering once or twice a day.
Great. So I'm too anxious to get out there right now. I'll wait.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Barbara, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you.
And a lot of us were anxious to get out there, say, yesterday or the day before. Today, that impulse may be quenched somewhat by
the weather. You may want to wait till at least this afternoon or tomorrow instead.
Right.
It's cold out right now.
It is. The next caller on the line is Bill in Fort Dodge. Hi, Bill.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. In the vein of cleaning up in the yard, I was wondering about benefits or problems with burning through my raspberry and blackberry patch. Is that a good idea or not?
I would definitely not do that because it may get so hot that it may damage those canes. So I would say, no, that's not a good idea.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Bill. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. I know a lot of people are doing prairie burns and things like that this time of year. It's been very dry. We did have some rain this week, but it's important to be really careful with that stuff.
Really
right now.
Careful because of the dryness. Mm-hmm. And if it's a windy day, it can just
get ahead
jump
of you.
Before mm-hmm. you know it. So.
All right, here's a quick question. This is from Emily in Iowa City. I received a sensitive feeler plant for Christmas. I'd like to plant it indoors. What are the best conditions?
A sensitive feeler plant. What that sounds to me is like it's a mimosa plant in which it's a sensitive plant. Does that sound like it to you, Richard?
It could be. If it is, when you touch it, the leaves kind of fold up.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a unique plant, not commonly grown, but... I'm assuming it's in a pot, and if they want to repot it, I guess I would just get a slightly bigger pot, a well-drained potting mix, and simply move it in.
Mm-hmm. All right. And we'll take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Linda Nave, Extension Program Specialist in the Value-Added Agriculture Program, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and with me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron. Linda Nave is Extension Program Specialist in the Value-Added Agriculture Program, and we'd love to hear from you with your questions. 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And one thing we didn't talk about, a lot of people are doing yard cleanup and garden cleanup this time of year, and a lot of municipalities try to make that a little bit easier on us. Right, Linda?
That's right, Charity. You know, some communities do offer one or two free yard waste disposal days, and that's a great opportunity and motivation to get out into your yard and start working on this process. Or keeping it. Now, you don't have to bag it up. You can bring it in by the pickup load for many communities or in the back and just dispose of it that way. But if you do bring it in bags, which is convenient and not as messy, you do have to empty those bags at those sites. But for example, Ames, our community, on Saturday, April 11th, between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m., they will have free day at their yard waste disposal site. So you can bring in bags of leaves, your cleanup off of your perennial bed, your vegetable garden bed. And at that time, that's one of the days you can bring in some brush. So if you're doing some pruning, light pruning of your shrubs, you can bring that in. Not all free days allow the brush, but in this particular case, it does. Some of the others around, for example, Iowa City typically has some free disposal for its county residents. In Scott County, City of Davenport solid waste customers will have a free day, free week, April 6th through April 17th. It's what they call no sticker day, in which you can bring it in without even having a sticker on it. So
you can check with your local waste disposal company or your county and find out.
Exactly. Or it might be in your flyer with your utility bill or something like that. defining when exactly your free day is in your community. So,
and it's a great way to give yourself a deadline.
It is.
I actually have to get this done.
Yes, I have to get it done. It's motivation that I'm going to do it that day and take it in. Just be prepared. There may be a line because a lot of people do take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
I was working on my yard stuff last night, so I'm getting ready for next Saturday.
That's good.
All right.
So Richard will be in line.
Yes, I will.
Another thing to be thinking about, Charity, is Earth Day is coming up on April 22nd. A lot of communities and municipalities are doing special events and activities and volunteer opportunities related to Earth Day. So that's something else to be thinking about as far as community cleanup.
And Earth Day seems to, when it falls in the middle of the week like it does this year, it tends to turn into kind of an Earth week.
It does. So,
do look around. All right, let's go back to the phones. Raj is on the line in Des Moines. Hi.
Hi, Charity. I love you guys' program.
Oh, thanks.
I just have a couple of quick questions. I was reading about a more organic lawn, and that included overseeding the lawn with clover. So that was something I was planning on doing this year.
Okay.
Hello?
Right.
And, you know, the clover does add nitrogen to the soil, but in terms of putting in something to add the P and the K, would milorganite be something you guys would recommend?
Well, you can use that. Right.
Yeah.
You can use that. That is basically composted sewage sludge from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's a very common product. So in that regard, it is considered organic. You can use that. I would say to begin with that most garden soils, most lawn soils in Iowa have fairly high levels of phosphate and potash. So you typically really don't need to add that much to your turf grass. What the turf grass typically needs far more of is nitrogen. So I don't think you really have to add a lot of phosphate or potash. The milorganite has some phosphate in it, but not a very large quantity. I think it's like maybe 2 or 3%, but it's not really that critical typically.
And any advice on overseeding with clover?
Well, you can try doing that. You could do that this spring or maybe late summer.
All right. And we talk about late summer being the best time to plant grass seed. Does that also go for clover? Or?
I'm not sure it makes much difference. I'd probably do it in the spring or basically late summer, not obviously in midsummer when growing conditions tend to be rather difficult.
Right.
But, and make sure it's Dutch white clover.
Okay. All right, Raj, good luck with that project. And Barbara is on the line next in Charles City. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I have been hearing that monarchs are so threatened from their loss of habitat, you know, that they're encouraging us to plant milkweed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been having a problem finding milkweed seeds, surely, and most of the plants aren't around. I'm wondering if you have any advice on that.
Well, there are a number of milkweeds that the actual larvae will feed on, okay? They prefer the common milkweed, which we regard as a weed, but they also feed on other... They also feed on other milkweed species, too. Now, one you can find commonly in garden centers is butterfly weed. It's a native plant. It's also a very attractive ornamental. There are some companies that specialize in native plant material as far as plants and seeds. And so I would go to their sites on the internet and see what they have. I can give you a few names. One is the Prairie Nursery in Wisconsin. There's also the Prairie Moon Nursery in Minnesota, and also Ion Exchange, I-O-N Exchange, in Harper Ferries, Iowa. So those are possibilities. Some of those companies sell seeds and plants. Some have strictly seeds. But I will also say that there's been tremendous demand for these plants, and you may find that they're basically sold out at this point already for this year.
All right. Barbara, thank you so much for your call. And we've certainly been getting that question a lot so far in 2015.
Yes.
So that speaks to the demand.
Right. They're probably going to have a lot more seeds and plants next year.
Absolutely. All right. Next up, we've got Mike on the line in Fairfield. Hi, Mike.
Hi. My question is there any kind of a species of bamboo that would grow in Iowa?
There are some that might survive, especially in southern Iowa, but I would caution you to be very cautious on this, in that these things can be very invasive, and they can be very hard to destroy. So consider that before you actually plant these, because they tend to run, and they tend to be very, very hard to destroy once you have them established. What you might consider doing is, if you find a hardy type or variety, put it in a large pot.
Well, that's a good idea.
And then sink the pot in the ground, and you can enjoy it, but it stays in the pot. That might be the best way of dealing with it, because they can be very invasive.
Yeah, makes sense. I just know in the Northwest where I came from, they used to grow and, you know, use it in the backyards for as borders and stuff like that.
Oh, it's very, very common on the East Coast, Southeast. Most of those species are not hardy in Iowa, but I think there are a handful, maybe a few, that we can grow here. But I would definitely put them in a pot.
All right, and if they're hardy in Iowa, they're super, super hardy. Is that,
yes.
Is that the
yes,
moral
they are.
Of the story? All right. Mike, thank you so much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Joanne is on the line in Coal Valley, Illinois. Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for your nice program, and my question is about dogwood trees. I have a spot that I really, really would love to get one to thrive, but we've tried three different times, and it looks like the third time is not going to be successful either. I did have the soil tested, and they said it was normal, it was fine, so I don't know if I'm underwatering, overwatering, or if the soil is just not compatible. We're zone 5.
Right. And when you say dogwood, are you saying flowering dogwood? Because there are okay. Well, there are a number of dogwoods, but unfortunately the flowering dogwood is not that hardy. It's more of a southern type tree. So you see this in Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, very common down there. But in Iowa, it's just not reliably hardy. We have a few on campus. They're in very protected areas. And the winter 2 years ago was extremely cold, and our trees on campus were badly damaged. So they're just not reliably hardy in central Iowa. Maybe in the southeast corner, possibly, but in most of Iowa, they're just not very hardy. Now, what you can try maybe instead is you can maybe try a coosa dogwood. It's somewhat similar. It's a little bit more hardy. So look for a coosa dogwood. That's K-O-U-S-A, coosa dogwood. And there are some other dogwoods that we typically don't think of. And I think of the carnelian cherry dogwood. That's a dogwood. It's a small tree. It has yellow flowers, small little yellow flowers, but it's something that we can grow, and it is, in fact, a dogwood. So you might consider that. But if you want something that has the more characteristic white petals, you might want to try the coosa dogwood. Your problem has nothing to do with your soil, your watering. It's basically the winter. That's the problem.
All right. Well, thank you for your help. And the carnelian, what was the second word?
Carnelian cherry dogwood. It flowers very early in the spring. In fact, in Ames, it's blooming right now. And after blooming, it forms a oblong fruit. It turns cherry red. It's edible, hence carnelian cherry dogwood.
All right, Joanne, thanks a lot for your call. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Richard Duran and Linda Nave. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Barbara's up next in Kelowna. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I have a mound of ground-up tree trunk, and I don't know if it's safe to put that in my garden or on the grass, or what I can do with it safely.
Yeah, if you have basically wood chips or sawdust-like material, you can use that as a mulch. That works fine.
Even in the vegetable garden?
Well, I probably wouldn't use it there. I would be more inclined to use it in a more permanent site that you don't disturb. For example, a perennial flower bed would be a great place to put it.
Uh-huh.
You could put it around trees or shrubs. That would be a good place to put it. If you have a raspberry patch between the rows, that would be great for a raspberry patch. So those would be great areas for the wood chips.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call. Mm-hmm. And let's get to a few emails here. This one is from Mitchell in Des Moines. I have a backyard that has some large spots of bare dirt that I want to grow grass on. I've been successful seeding grass in some spots that are partial shade, mostly sun, but I've struggled in the spots that are full sun, no shade. What's the best way to give the grass seed the greatest chance of success? As a matter of pride, I don't want to sod.
Okay.
He says his wife doesn't think he can do this successfully. Also, he says he has a rambunctious 130-pound Bernese mountain dog that plays in the backyard and has big paws.
Okay. So what I would do is wait till basically late August. Well, maybe start in mid-August. Prepare the site, work it up, and then I would go ahead and seed the area in late August. I would put fencing around it, keep the dog off the area. That's going to have to be
the key, right?
The key. That's the key there. And that dog is going to have to stay off the area probably until the following spring. But do that. Keep the seed bed moist. Buy a seed mix that is largely Kentucky bluegrass, a little bit of perennial rye in there, maybe 10 or 20%, the rest bluegrass. And if you keep the seed bed moist, it should be up within maybe a week or so. And by early fall, you should have a nice, good stand of grass. Keep it well mowed in the fall. And possibly the next spring, you can remove the fencing.
Okay.
But it's going to take a while.
It's a long-term project.
Right.
But pride is on the line, right?
Right. And as far as dog traffic, when that ground is kind of soft and mushy in the fall, could tear it up real easy. So you'll probably have to keep the dog off until maybe spring.
All right. Good luck with that project. This one's from Marilyn in Perry. I have an orchid that has a new plant growing about 10 inches out from the pot on an old stem. The new plant looks very healthy and is now getting little swelled places on the bottom of the plant that I assume are the beginning of roots. How do I go about severing this new plant from the old one? When do I do that? I have some compound that's supposed to be for potting orchids.
If you have a potting mix for orchids, that's great. Potting soil does not work well with orchids, but the potting mix contains bark, mica, maybe a little bit of vermiculite, and other things that are very, very porous that allows good drainage, but yet holds just the right amount of moisture to supply that orchid. What she's seeing is some new segments on that orchid that will... They're like new babies, new plants that are being formed. And if she does start to see some root development on the bottom of those, they can be severed simply by gently, in some cases, depending on the species of the orchid, broken off or severed. And they'll sever fairly easily. You'll see the point where which they can be divided. And then pot it up, not too deep, rather shallow. You'll find that the roots do start working their way out over the top of the container. That's just their natural habit. But they do pot up fairly easily. So she can take that segment from that and pot it up. And again, it depends on the species. And she didn't say what species she had.
Okay. Here's one more email question. This one's from Naomi in Story City. I've heard the phrase plant peas when the lilac leaves are the size of a mouse's ear. I've also heard that there are other indicator plants that are helpful in gauging when to plant other garden seeds. Is this true? And if so, what other indicator plants should I be watching for?
I would be going more by, let's say, average growing conditions in Iowa. Because normal is never normal in Iowa, so I use the term average. But you want to plant your cool season things early in the spring. As soon as the ground has firmed up, it's getting a little bit warm. Things like, for example, lettuce and spinach and radishes, carrots and beets. We can start planting those in early April. Same with peas, okay, because they like the cool weather. And then those things that are basically warm season that really can't tolerate a frost or freeze, things like tomatoes and peppers we plant basically in May. So kind of knowing that, are they cool season? Are they warm season? Do they tolerate a frost or freeze? Are they very frost sensitive?
All right. And I depend on my Iowa State University Extension horticulture
yes.
calendar.
And,
to
and
tell
that's
me that,
good.
So.
And it's funny, whereas we're speaking today, it is Good Friday in the calendar. And that typically is a traditional day to plant potatoes. And that's been passed down through generations. You plant your potatoes on Good Friday. Is there any scientific basis to that? Probably not.
No.
But it's just one of those things.
It's usually spring, right?
And it's spring.
But sometimes this occurs in March, which is too early.
Yes, so, or sometimes there's still snow on the ground, yes, right. And or it's too wet. So we really need to go on our soil and garden conditions versus the calendar. But it is a fun thing to go by.
And is it time to plant potatoes, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes, definitely.
The soil can be worked. The soil's ready to go. The garden centers are loaded with them. So go for it.
And, of course, Mother's Day is the traditional time to plant your tomatoes, right?
Yes.
All right. We'll take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Linda Nave and Richard Giron. We'll get back to the phones in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University Extension horticulturists Linda Nave and Richard Giron. You can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. And Sherry is on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Sherry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
I have a question about daffodils or bulbs in general. I have a perennial flower bed that gets full sun. And every year my daffodils come up really early, and then I end up having to protect them from early spring frost or cold. And I'm wondering if I'm being too overprotective.
Yeah, I think you are being too overprotective. They can handle some cold temperatures. The snow is probably the worst thing for them. If we come up early and we get a late snow, and it smashes them down, but it doesn't kill them, and it just shortens their bloom time and makes it unattractive. But no, I think you're overprotective if you try to cover them. They can handle some pretty cold temperatures.
Now, if you want to maybe slow them down in the spring, what you might do is go out there like around Thanksgiving and cover the area with several inches of straw, because that straw will keep the ground cooler in the spring, and that should kind of slow them down a little bit as far as coming up. So if you do that around Thanksgiving, that should slow them down a little bit.
Okay, good tip. One other quick question. Are there any other bulbs that are deer resistant? Because I know they love to eat tulips. And they leave the daffodils alone, which
yeah.
is great.
That's why I love daffodils. The rabbits and the deer basically will not eat them. But essentially, they'll eat almost anything else. They love tulips. They'll eat hyacinths too. Not as much, but they'll eat those too.
The scilla that's blooming right now, they tend to be a little bit more tolerant of it. They don't like those as well. And maybe chinodoxa, but they're small. They're quick blooming in the spring. So,
what about crocus?
Oh, they like crocus.
Yeah, they like crocus,
okay.
Yeah.
They like everything, I think.
Now, the nice thing about the daffodils is they're actually quite diverse as far as the size, the color, the shape. There are many, many cultivars. So you might try some of these other more exotic ones. They're still very attractive to add maybe some diversity. And definitely the deer and rabbits will not eat them.
All right, Sherry, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got David in Moline. Hi, David.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of hydrangea trees that didn't get pruned back last fall. Is it too late to prune them back now?
No, you could still do that. Basically, some of the shrubs are beginning to leaf out. So if you're going to do that, do it as soon as possible within the next, let's say, 4 or 5 days. So if you can get it done this weekend, it should be okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Kristen is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Kristen. Kristen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is about sweet potatoes. I heard you talk about regular potatoes, that it's time to plant mm-hmm. them. But sweet potatoes, last year I bought some plants, mm-hmm. Seedlings, and I had great luck with those. But this year I would like to start them just from potatoes. Or how could I do that without buying seedlings?
Well, what you can try doing is if you have the actual tubers, getting a flat or some other container and some very fine sand, and put a layer of sand in the bottom of your container, then okay. lay your tuber on top of that, and then cover with an inch or two more of sand. So they're basically covered with a little bit of sand,
okay.
and then keep the sand moist. by watering periodically.
So they prefer sandy ground compared to regular soil?
Excuse me?
Do they prefer sandy soil compared to regular soil?
I just think it would be better to root them in sand rather than potting soil. It's going to be easier to root them there, and then you're going to have to pull or cut off the sprouts. And with the sand, it comes off much easier. So I would do that. And hopefully within a few weeks, you'll start to see some sprouts coming up.
Okay.
And when the sprouts get about 8 inches in length, then at that point, I would kind of very carefully bring back the sand and see if there are roots at the base of that stem. Mm-hmm. And if there are, then at that point, I would very carefully pull them off or cut them off.
Okay. And when is the earliest time I can put them outside, do you think?
I'd be shooting for around May 20th in central Iowa. They're a warm season in the crop. They just don't like the cool weather that we have or tend to have earlier in the spring. So I'd be shooting for about May 20th.
Okay, that's great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Kristen. 866-780-9100. Linda is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Linda.
Hello. I'm in the process of pruning my blueberry bushes. And this year, for the first time, I'm noticing a lot of very upright canes growing. They kind of remind me of like the water stems that you see like on trees, but they seem to almost have like a little bit of a thorn on them. And they're very different than the usual blueberry branches that I see. And I'm wondering, do I just cut those out completely? Do I just prune them back? Or maybe what's causing it to happen?
Well, the blueberries will bear most of their fruit on younger shoots or branches. And typically with blueberries, as far as pruning that we do, it's mainly to prune out some of the older growth periodically. So if you had a plant that's been there for several years, you want to go out and remove some of that old growth because at a certain age, they're no longer very productive. And you want to keep some of the new growth. And so over the time, you're basically keeping it at a young plant. So basically what you would want to do is remove some of the old growth, and that encourages new growth, and doing that every year once you have an established plant.
Okay, well, I have plants. I have some bushes that are like 25 years old, and I've been doing that, and it works well. But I'm just concerned about these tall, straight pieces that come up with a bit of a thorn on them almost, and then right at the very end seem to have a cluster of whether it's a leaf bud or a fruit bud, I can't tell.
Well, I would remove again some of the old growth, and maybe if it's producing a lot of new growth, maybe taking out some of that too, so you have a nice, healthy mix of older wood and newer wood.
Okay. All right. Well, it's just a little different this year than the past. So anyway, thank you so much.
All right, Linda, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Pat is up next in Manchester. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have a question about my lawn. We had reseeded an area in our lawn that's in full sun a few years ago, and the grass did not come very well, but there's clover and all kinds of other things in there that really we don't want. Wondering what the best way is to renovate that, if we need to, you know, chill it all up and take it back to the reseeding stage, or is there any way we can interseed or weed and seed, or what's your best recommendation and what's the time frame to do that?
Well, typically, I would base it on the amount of grass versus the amount of weeds. If the area is more than 50% grass, I would keep the grass and try to get rid of the broadleaf weeds. If it's more weeds than grass, I would be inclined to destroy the whole thing and start over. So which do you think you have?
It is predominantly weeds, I would say.
So
would you till it up then, or what did you think is to be the best way to do that?
Right. In that situation where I have an area that is mainly weeds, I would probably just leave it at this point, keep it maintained as best you can, and then go out probably in early August and destroy the area. And one way of doing that would be to use Roundup. You could do that. You could simply till it up, but you need to destroy what's there.
Right.
And then once you've done that, then I come back in mid to late August and sow my grass seed. Now, if you do use Roundup, one thing that does, it kills the weeds, and you could use like a drill or a seed type device and actually sow mm-hmm. seed directly into that dead debris. So you wouldn't have to till up the area. So that might save you on some labor. Otherwise, you'd basically have to till it up, rake off the dead debris, and basically seed it in August.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, it's not a large area. I'm not good with measurements. I'd say it's probably maybe 40 by 40 area, okay. So it's not a huge whole lawn or anything, but it just, the grass just did not take for whatever reason, but the clover is doing well.
Right. So just keep it mowed this spring and summer and then take care of it in late summer.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Pat, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, it's Janet in Iowa City. Hi, Janet.
Hi. Is it too late to put out crabgrass preventer?
Actually, it's a little bit early yet.
Oh.
Richard and I were just talking about that when we
yes.
were talking about seasonality and telling when things should be put out based on indicators.
I was busy and tuned in late, so I was hoping
yeah.
you hadn't discussed it yet.
Right. So, the important thing to remember with crabgrass is it's a warm season grass. It really likes warm temperatures, warm soil temperatures. And typically here in central Iowa, we want to apply that sometime between April 15th and May 1st.
Okay.
Now, we do have a very good clue on when to do this because as far as plants and how they respond to weather, we basically put on the pre-emergent when the forsythia is almost done blooming.
Oh!
They just started to bloom here in Ames. They should be in bloom for about a week, and that brings us up to about April 15th.
Great.
All right,
okay.
Janet. Thanks
Thank
a lot
you
for your
much.
Call. Yep.
So that is an indicator, Charity. That really works.
All right. We'll add that to the list of lilac leaves the size of a mouse's ears. I love that one, actually. All right, let's get here's an email question. This one's from Ellen. I covered my rose bushes with soil and then pine needles. When should I remove these layers?
There again, it depends on the weather. If we look at an extended forecast and it's not going to be too cold, I would start dating it off just as soon as possible, because if you were to dig underneath that mulch and pine needles, you'll see that that rose is going to have some buds that are breaking, and those buds are sensitive to damage. If they start sprouting too much when you start removing the mulch, you're going to remove some of those sprouts. So you don't want to do that. So as soon as you can, I would get out there after maybe tonight's supposed to be cool. Then from then on, we're pretty good. Take it off and let nature do its thing. Pruning-wise, you want to prune off the dead wood that's on top down to the live growth, if not further down, depending on how much is still alive. But I would say take it off as soon as you can.
All right. This is another question from email. I put in a new redbud tree last year. When should I expect to see the flowers start to appear? I'm a little worried because I don't see anything yet.
Well, it's early yet. And the fact it's a new plant, it's going to probably leaf out a little bit later than established plants. And it may not bloom this year because it is a young plant. So if it doesn't bloom, don't be disappointed. It's going to have to leaf out, though. And obviously, I would be nervous if it hasn't leafed out by mid-May. I would wait until the end of May. If it hasn't leafed out by June 1, it didn't make it, unfortunately. And that is a risk when you plant something.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. George is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, George.
Good morning. My question is concerning the chicken mulch that I had cleaned out my chicken coop last fall in October, and I put it in a compost bin. Is it too hot to put in my garden?
No. In your vegetable garden, we usually say you want at least 4 months or so before you should put manure into your garden. You've given it that length of time. It should be pretty well decomposed. You probably had a little bit of leaching. So I would say go ahead, work that into your garden soil.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, George. Next up, we have Eleanor in Rock Island. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Good. I'm getting married September 26th, and I know that that's kind of late in the season, but I would like to grow most of my flowers, and I'm just curious what you recommend.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
And the date again was when?
September 26th.
And where do you live?
Rock Island, Quad Cities.
Okay. So you're still pretty safe. I was going to say, if you're up in northern Iowa, that's pretty risky, but you can still do some things.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to schedule things to bloom at a specific time. Obviously, one thing you could do would be to grow a number of annual plants.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking things like, for example, geraniums. Okay.
Very
easy to grow. They should still be blooming nicely at the end of summer. So that would be a possibility.
Are you looking at bouquets or and flower arrangements or potted plants?
Everything. But I was looking at zinnias specifically.
Zinnias will be fine. Just give them plenty of space to grow and good air movement around, because one of the problems we see with the tall growing zinnias that make really pretty cut flowers is they're very susceptible to powdery mildew on the foliage. So give them plenty of room to grow and full sun, good air movement, and grow them so that they can branch out a little bit, but you'll have long stems. Another good cut flower for weddings, and I experienced this myself with my daughter's wedding, is dahlias. And end of September, dahlias will be blooming pretty well at that time of year. That's actually a better time than July for dahlias, because they're just starting to bloom about then. So end of September, if we don't get hit by a freeze early, would be a good choice. Go with the taller blooming ones, those that are specific for cut flowers. The little bedding dahlias won't give you the long enough stems.
Another possibility would be the glads. Those are a tender perennial. You plant a bulb, and they typically bloom about 8 to 10 weeks after planting. So you kind of schedule that. And in that case, what I would probably do is maybe put in two or three plantings to make sure you have something in bloom.
Okay, great.
All right, good
Thank
luck
you.
With that,
Thank
Eleanor.
Thank you so much. Great.
Yep. Way to plan ahead.
Another good one would be sunflowers. They tend to bloom later, and you can plant them at various times, even later in the season, so you can time it so you have some sunflowers available. And they've got some beautiful sunflowers for cut flowers today.
All right. Well, good luck with all of that, Eleanor. And I'll ask you this question on the way out. I like to add daffodils to my large daffodil bed every year. What is the secret to planting new bulbs without damaging old bulbs?
Knowing where they are. So when they're basically up and growing this spring, mark them so you know exactly where they are in the fall.
All right. Richard Geron, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Geron. Linda Nave, thank you. Iowa State University Extension Program Specialist in the Value Added Agriculture Program. We'll be back with Horticulture Day again next Friday. Have a wonderful weekend. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.